20. I thought, suppose with my teeth clenched and my tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth, I beat down, constrain and crush mind with mind. So with my teeth clenched and my tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth, I beat down, constrained and crushed mind with mind. While I did so, sweat ran from my armpits, just as a strong man might seize a weaker man by the head or shoulders and beat him down, constrain him and crush him, so too with my teeth clenched and my tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth, I beat down, constrained and crushed mind with mind, and sweat ran from my armpits. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, an unremitting mindfulness was established, my body was overwrought and strained, because I was exhausted by the painful striving. But such painful feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 21. I thought, suppose I practice the breathless meditation. So I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my mouth and nose. While I did so, there was a loud sound of winds coming out from my ear holes, just as there is a loud sound when a smith's bellows are blown. So too, while I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my nose and ears, there was a loud sound of winds coming out from my ear holes. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, an unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was overwrought and strained, because I was exhausted by the painful striving. But such painful feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 22. I thought, suppose I practice further the breathless meditation. So, I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my mouth, nose, and ears. While I did so, violent winds cut through my head, just as if a strong man were pressing against my head with the tip of a sharp sword. So too, while I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my mouth, nose, and ears, violent winds cut through my head. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, an unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was overwrought and strained because I was exhausted by the painful striving. But such painful feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 23. I thought, suppose I practice further the breathless meditation. So I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my mouth, nose, and ears. While I did so, there were violent pains in my head, just as if a strong man were tightening a tough leather strap around my head as a headband. So too, while I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my mouth, nose, and ears, there were violent pains in my head. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness was established, my body was overwrought and strained, because I was exhausted by the painful striving. But such painful feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 25. I thought, suppose I practice further the breathless meditation. So I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my mouth, nose, and ears. While I did so, there was a violent burning in my body, just as if two strong men were to seize a weaker man by both arms and roast him over a pit of hot coals. So too, while I stopped the in-breaths and out-breaths through my mouth, nose, and ears, there was a violent burning in my body. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness was established, my body was overwrought and strained, because I was exhausted by the painful striving. But such painful feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 26. Now when deities saw me, some said, the ascetic Gotama is dead. Other deities said, the ascetic Gotama is not dead, he is dying. And other deities said, the ascetic Gotama is neither dead nor dying. He is an arahant, for such is the way arahants dwell. 27. I thought, suppose I practice entirely cutting off food. Then deities came to me and said, good sir, do not practice entirely cutting off food. If you do so, we shall infuse heavenly food into the pores of your skin, and this will sustain you. I considered, if I claim to be completely fasting while these deities infuse heavenly food into the pores of my skin, and this sustains me, then I shall be lying. So I dismissed these deities, saying, there is no need. 28. I thought, suppose I take very little food, a handful each time, whether of bean soup or lentil soup or veg soup or pea soup. So I took very little food, a handful each time, whether of bean soup or lentil soup or veg soup or pea soup. While I did so, my body reached a state of extreme emaciation. Because of eating so little, my limbs became like the jointed segments of vine stems or bamboo stems. Because of eating so little, my backside became like a camel's hoof. Because of eating so little, the projections on my spine stood forth like corded beads. Because of eating so little, my ribs jutted out as gaunt as the crazy rafters of an old roofless barn. Because of eating so little, the gleam of my eyes sank far down in their sockets, looking like the gleam of water that has sunk far down in a deep well. Because of eating so little, my scalp shriveled and withered as a green, bitter gourd shrivels and withers in the wind and sun. Because of eating so little, my belly skin adhered to my backbone. Thus, if I touched my belly skin, I encountered my backbone, and if I touched my backbone, I encountered my belly skin. Because of eating so little, if I defecated or urinated, I fell over on my face there. Because of eating so little, if I tried to ease my body by rubbing my limbs with my hands, the hair, rotted at its roots, fell from my body as I rubbed. 29. Now, when people saw me, some said, the ascetic Gotama is black. Other people said, the ascetic Gotama is not black, he is brown. Other people said, the ascetic Gotama is neither black nor brown, he is golden-skinned. So much had the clear, bright color of my skin deteriorated through eating so little. 30. I thought, whatever ascetics or Brahmins in the past have experienced painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion, this is the utmost. There is none beyond this. And whatever ascetics and Brahmins in the future will experience painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion, this is the utmost. There is none beyond this. And whatever ascetics and Brahmins at present experience painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion, this is the utmost. There is none beyond this. But by this racking practice of austerities, I have not attained any superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. Could there be another path to enlightenment? 31. I considered. I recall that when my father, the Sakyan, was occupied, while I was sitting in the cool shade of a rose-apple tree, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, I entered and dwelled in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. Could this be the path to enlightenment? Then, following on that memory, came the realization, this is indeed the path to enlightenment. 32. I thought, why am I afraid of that happiness that has nothing to do with sensual pleasures and unwholesome states? I thought, I am not afraid of that happiness that has nothing to do with sensual pleasures and unwholesome states. 33. I considered, it is not easy to attain that happiness with a body so excessively emaciated. Suppose I ate some solid food, some boiled rice and porridge. And I ate some solid food, some boiled rice and porridge. Now at that time, five monks were waiting upon me, thinking, if our ascetic Gotama achieves some higher state, he will inform us. But when I ate the boiled rice and porridge, the five monks were disgusted and left me, thinking, the ascetic Gotama now lives luxuriously. He has given up his striving and reverted to luxury. 34. Now when I had eaten solid food and regained my strength,
Then, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, I entered and dwelled in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. But such pleasant feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 35. With the subsiding of thought and examination, I entered and dwelled in the second jhana, which has internal confidence and unification of mind, is without thought and examination, and has rapture and happiness born of concentration. But such pleasant feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 36. With the fading away as well of rapture, I dwelled equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. I experienced happiness with the body. I entered and dwelled in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declared, "He is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily." But such pleasant feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 37. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and displeasure, I entered and dwelled in the fourth jhana, which is neither painful nor pleasant, and includes the purification of mindfulness by equanimity. But such pleasant feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 38. When my mind was thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the recollection of past lives. I recollected my manifold past lives, that is, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many eons of world contraction, many eons of world expansion, many eons of world contraction and expansion. There I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my nutriment, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan, and passing away from there I was reborn elsewhere, and there too I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my nutriment, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan, and passing away from there I was reborn here. Thus, with their aspects and particulars, I recollected my manifold past lives. 39. This was the first true knowledge attained by me in the first watch of the night. Ignorance was banished, and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished, and light arose, as happens in one who dwells diligent, ardent, and resolute. But such pleasant feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 40. When my mind was thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the passing away and rebirth of beings. With the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, I saw beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate. And I understood how beings fare on according to their actions thus. These beings who behaved wrongly by body, speech, and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong view, and undertook actions based on wrong view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. But these beings who behaved well by body, speech, and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right view and undertook action based on right view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, I saw beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and I understood how beings fare on according to their actions. 41. This was the second true knowledge attained by me in the middle watch of the night. Ignorance was banished, and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished, and light arose, as happens in one who dwells diligent, ardent, and resolute. But such pleasant feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. 42. When my mind was thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the destruction of the taints. I directly knew as it actually is. This is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. I directly knew it as it actually is. These are the taints. This is the origin of the taints. This is the cessation of the taints. This is the way leading to the cessation of the taints. 43. When I knew and saw thus, my mind was liberated from the taint of sensual desire, from the taint of existence, and from the taint of ignorance. When it was liberated, there came the knowledge, it is liberated. I directly knew, birth is destroyed, the spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. 44. This was the third true knowledge attained by me in the last watch of the night. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished and light arose. As happens in one who dwells diligent, ardent, and resolute. But such pleasant feeling that arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. From Majjhima Nikaya, 36, Mahasaka Sutta, 1, 240 through 249. Verse 3. The Ancient City. Monks, before my enlightenment, while I was still a bodhisattva, not yet fully enlightened, it occurred to me, alas, this world has fallen into trouble, in that it is born, ages, and dies. It passes away and is reborn. Yet it does not understand the escape from this suffering, headed by aging and death. When now will an escape be discerned from this suffering headed by aging and death? Then, monks, it occurred to me, when what exists does aging and death come to be? By what is aging and death conditioned? Then, monks, through careful attention, there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. When there is birth, aging and death comes to be. Aging and death has birth as its condition. Then, monks, it occurred to me, when what exists does birth come to be? Existence, clinging, craving, feeling, contact, the six sense bases, name and form, by what is name and form conditioned? Then, monks, through careful attention, there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. When there is consciousness, name and form comes to be. Name and form has consciousness as its condition. Then, monks, it occurred to me, when what exists does consciousness come to be? By what is consciousness conditioned? Then, monks, through careful attention, there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. When there is name and form, consciousness comes to be. Consciousness has name and form as its condition. Then, monks, it occurred to me, this consciousness turns back. It does not go further than name and form. It is to this extent that one may be born and age and die, pass away and be reborn. That is, when there is consciousness with name and form as its condition, and name and form with consciousness as its condition. With name and form as condition, the six sense bases, with the six sense bases as condition, contact. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. Origination, Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. Then, monks, it occurred to me, when what does not exist, does aging and death not come to be? With the cessation of what does the cessation of aging and death come about? Then, monks, through careful attention, there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. When there is no birth, aging and death does not come to be. With the cessation of birth comes cessation of aging and death. It occurred to me, when what does not exist, does birth not come to be? Existence, clinging, craving, feeling, contact, the six sense bases, name and form. With the cessation of what does the cessation of name and form come about? Then, monks, through careful attention, there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. When there is no consciousness, name and form does not come to be. With the cessation of consciousness comes cessation of name and form. It occurred to me, when what does not exist, does consciousness not come to be? With the cessation of what does the cessation of consciousness come about? Then, monks, through careful attention, there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom. When there is no name and form, consciousness does not come to be. With the cessation of name and form comes cessation of consciousness. Then, monks, it occurred to me, I have discovered this path to enlightenment. That is, with the cessation of name and form comes cessation of consciousness. With the cessation of consciousness comes cessation of name and form. With the cessation of name and form, cessation of the six sense bases. With the cessation of the six sense bases, cessation of contact. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Cessation, cessation. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. Suppose, monks, a man wandering through a forest would see an ancient path, an ancient road traveled upon by people in the past. He would follow it and would see an ancient city, an ancient capital that had been inhabited by people in the past, with parks, groves, ponds, and ramparts, a delightful place. Then the man would inform the king or a royal minister, "Sire, know that while wandering through the forest, I saw an ancient path, an ancient road traveled upon by people in the past. I followed it and saw an ancient city, an ancient capital that had been inhabited by people in the past, with parks, groves, ponds, and ramparts, a delightful place. Renovate that city, sire." Then the king or royal minister would renovate the city, and some time later, that city would become successful and prosperous, well populated, filled with people, attained to growth and expansion. So too, monks, I saw the ancient path, the ancient road traveled by the perfectly enlightened ones of the past. And what is that ancient path, that ancient road? It is just this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. I followed that path, and by doing so I have directly known aging and death, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation. I have directly known birth, existence, clinging, craving, feeling, contact, the six sense bases, name and form, consciousness, volitional formations, their origin, their cessation, and the way leading to their cessation. Having directly known them, I have explained them to the monks, the nuns, the male lay followers, and the female lay followers. This spiritual life, monks, has become successful and prosperous, extended, popular, widespread, well proclaimed among devas and humans. Samyutta Nikaya 12:65, 2, 104 through 107. Part 4. The Decision to Teach. 19. I considered, this Dhamma that I have attained is profound, hard to see and hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle, to be experienced by the wise. But this population delights in attachment, takes delight in attachment, rejoices in attachment. It is hard for such a population to see this truth, namely, specific conditionality, dependent origination. And it is hard to see this truth, namely, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all acquisitions, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. If I were to teach the Dhamma, others would not understand me, and that would be wearying and troublesome for me. Thereupon, there came to me spontaneously these stanzas never heard before. Enough with teaching the Dhamma, that even I found hard to reach, for it will never be perceived by those who live in lust and hate. Those died in lust, wrapped in darkness, will never discern this abstruse Dhamma, which goes against the worldly stream, subtle, deep, and difficult to see. Considering thus, my mind inclined to inaction rather than to teaching the Dhamma. 20. Then, monks, the Brahma Sahampati knew with his mind the thought in my mind, and he considered, the world will be lost, the world will perish, since the mind of the Tathagata, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, inclines to inaction rather than to teaching the Dhamma. Then, just as quickly as a strong man might extend his flexed arm or flex his extended arm, the Brahma Sahampati vanished in the Brahma world and appeared before me. He arranged his upper robe on one shoulder and, extending his hands in reverential salutation toward me, said, Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One teach the Dhamma. Let the Sublime One teach the Dhamma. There are beings with little dust in their eyes who are perishing through not hearing the Dhamma. There will be those who will understand the Dhamma. The Brahma Sahampati spoke thus. And then he said further, In Magadha there have appeared till now impure teachings devised by those still stained. Open the doors to the deathless. Let them hear the Dhamma that the stainless one has found. Just as one who stands on a mountain peak can see below the people all around, so, O wise one, all-seeing sage, ascend the palace of the Dhamma. Let the sorrowless one survey this human breed, engulfed in sorrow, overcome by birth and old age. Arise, victorious hero, caravan leader, debtless one, and wander in the world. Let the Blessed One teach the Dhamma. There will be those who will understand. 21. Then I listened to the Brahma's pleading, and out of compassion for beings I surveyed the world with the eye of a Buddha. Surveying the world with the eye of a Buddha, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes and with much dust in their eyes, with keen faculties and with dull faculties, with good qualities and with bad qualities, easy to teach and hard to teach, and some who dwelled seeing fear and blame in the other world. Just as in a pond of blue or red or white lotuses, some lotuses that are born and grow in the water thrive immersed in the water without rising out of it. And some other lotuses that are born and grow in the water rest on the water's surface, and some other lotuses that are born and grow in the water rise out of the water and stand clear, unwetted by it. So too, surveying the world with the eye of a Buddha, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes and with much dust in their eyes, with keen faculties and with dull faculties, with good qualities and with bad qualities, easy to teach and hard to teach, and some who dwelled seeing fear and blame in the other world. Then I replied to the Brahma Sahampati in stanzas. Open for them are the doors to the deathless. Let those with ears now show their faith. thinking it would be troublesome, O Brahma. I did not speak the Dhamma subtle and sublime. Then the Brahma Sahampati thought, the Blessed One has consented to my request that he teach the Dhamma, and after paying homage to me, keeping me on the right, he thereupon departed at once. 22. I considered thus, to whom should I first teach the Dhamma? Who will understand this Dhamma quickly? It then occurred to me, Alara Kalama is wise, intelligent, and discerning. He has long had little dust in his eyes. Suppose I taught the Dhamma first to Alara Kalama. He will understand it quickly. Then deities approached me and said, Venerable Sir, Alara Kalama died 7 days ago, and the knowledge and vision arose in me. Alara Kalama died 7 days ago, I thought. Alara Kalama's loss is a great one. If he had heard this Dhamma, he would have understood it quickly. 23. I considered thus, to whom should I first teach the Dhamma? Who will understand this Dhamma quickly? It then occurred to me, Uddaka Ramaputta is wise, intelligent, and discerning. He has long had little dust in his eyes. Suppose I taught the Dhamma first to Uddaka Ramaputta. He will understand it quickly. Then deities approached me and said, Venerable Sir, Uddaka Ramaputta died last night, and the knowledge and vision arose in me. Uddaka Ramaputta died last night. I thought, Uddaka Ramaputta's loss is a great one. If he had heard this Dhamma, he would have understood it quickly. 24. I considered thus, to whom should I first teach the Dhamma? Who will understand this Dhamma quickly? It then occurred to me, the monks of the group of five who attended upon me while I was engaged in my striving were very helpful. Suppose I taught the Dhamma first to them. Then I thought, where are the monks of the group of five now living? And with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, I saw that they were living at Varanasi, in the deer park at Isipatana. 25. Then, monks, when I had stayed at Uruvela as long as I chose, I set out to wander by stages to Varanasi, between Gaya and the Bodhi. The Ajivaka Upaka saw me on the road and said, Friend, your faculties are clear. The color of your skin is pure and bright. Under whom have you gone forth, friend? Who is your teacher? Whose Dhamma do you profess? I replied to the Ajivaka Upaka in stanzas. I am one who has transcended all, a knower of all, unsullied among all things, renouncing all, by cravings ceasing freed, having known this all. For myself, to whom should I point as teacher? I have no teacher, and one like me exists nowhere in all the world, with all its devas, because I have no person for my counterpart. For I am the Arahant in the world. I am the Teacher Supreme. I alone am a perfectly enlightened one, whose fires are quenched and extinguished. I go now to the city of Kasi to set in motion the wheel of Dhamma. In a world that has become blind, I go to beat the drum of the deathless. By your claims, friend, you ought to be the universal victor. The victors are those like me, who have won the destruction of taints. I have vanquished all evil states. Therefore, Upaka, I am a victor. When this was said, the Ajivaka Upaka said, May it be so, friend. Shaking his head, he took a bypath and departed. 26. Then, monks, wandering by stages, I eventually came to Varanasi, to the deer park at Isipatana, and I approached the monks of the group of five. The monks saw me coming in the distance, and they agreed among themselves thus, Friends, here comes the ascetic Gotama who lives luxuriously, who gave up his striving and reverted to luxury. We should not pay homage to him, or rise up for him, or receive his bowl and outer robe. But a seat may be prepared for him. If he likes, he may sit down. However, as I approached, those monks found themselves unable to keep their pact. One came to meet me and took my bowl and outer robe. Another prepared a seat, and another set out water for my feet. However, they addressed me by name and as friend. 27. Thereupon I told them, Monks, do not address the Tathagata by name and as friend. The Tathagata is an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. Listen, monks, the deathless has been attained. I shall instruct you. I shall teach you the Dhamma, practicing as you are instructed. By realizing it for yourselves here and now through direct knowledge, you will soon enter and dwell in that supreme goal of the holy life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. When this was said, the monks of the group of five answered me thus, Friend Gotama, by the conduct, the practice, and the performance of austerities that you undertook, you did not achieve any superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. Since you now live luxuriously, having given up your striving and reverted to luxury, how could you have achieved any superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones? When this was said, I told them, The Tathagata does not live luxuriously, nor has he given up his striving and reverted to luxury. The Tathagata is an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. Listen, monks, the deathless has been attained. From the home life into homelessness. A second time, the monks of the group of five said to me, Friend Gotama, how could you have achieved any superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones? A second time I told them, The Tathagata does not live luxuriously, from the home life into homelessness. A third time, the monks of the group of five said to me, Friend Gotama, how could you have reached any superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones? 28. When this was said, I asked them, Monks, have you ever known me to speak like this before? No, venerable sir. Monks, the Tathagata is an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. Listen, monks, the deathless has been attained. I shall instruct you. I shall teach you the Dhamma. Practicing as you are instructed, by realizing it for yourselves here and now through direct knowledge, you will soon enter and dwell in that supreme goal of the holy life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. 29. I was able to convince the monks of the group of five. Then I sometimes instructed two monks while the other three went for alms, and the six of us lived on what those three monks brought back from their alms round. Sometimes I instructed three monks while the other two went for alms, and the six of us lived on what those two monks brought back from their alms round. 30. Then the monks of the group of five, thus taught and instructed by me, being themselves subject to birth, having understood the danger in what is subject to birth, seeking the unborn supreme security from bondage, Nibbana, attained the unborn supreme security from bondage, Nibbana, being themselves subject to aging, sickness, death, sorrow, and defilement, having understood the danger in what is subject to aging, sickness, death, sorrow, and defilement, seeking the unaging, unailing, deathless, sorrowless, and undefiled supreme security from bondage, Nibbana. They attained the unaging, unailing, deathless, sorrowless, and undefiled supreme security from bondage, Nibbana. The knowledge and vision arose in them. Our liberation is unshakable. This is our last birth. Now there is no more renewed existence. From Majjhima Nikaya, 26. Ariyaparyesana Sutta 1. 167 through 173. Part 5. The First Discourse. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Baranasi in the deer park at Isipatana. There the Blessed One addressed the monks of the group of five thus, "Monks, these two extremes should not be followed by one who has gone forth into homelessness. What two? The pursuit of sensual happiness in sensual pleasures, which is low, vulgar, the way of worldlings, ignoble, unbeneficial, and the pursuit of self-mortification, which is painful, ignoble, unbeneficial. Without veering toward either of these extremes, the Tathagata has awakened to the middle way, which gives rise to vision, which gives rise to knowledge, and leads to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to Nibbana. And what, monks, is that middle way awakened to by the Tathagata? It is this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. This, monks, is that middle way awakened to by the Tathagata, which gives rise to vision, which gives rise to knowledge, and leads to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to Nibbana. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of suffering. Birth is suffering, aging is suffering, illness is suffering, death is suffering. Union with what is displeasing is suffering. A separation from what is pleasing is suffering. Not to get what one wants is suffering. In brief, the five aggregates subject to clinging are suffering. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of the origin of suffering. It is this craving that leads to renewed existence, accompanied by delight and lust, seeking delight here and there, that is, craving for sensual pleasures, craving for existence, craving for extermination. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. It is the remainderless fading away and cessation of that same craving, the giving up and relinquishing of it, freedom from it, non-attachment. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. It is this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right concentration. This is the noble truth of suffering. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of suffering is to be fully understood. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of suffering has been fully understood. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This is the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of the origin of suffering is to be abandoned. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of the origin of suffering has been abandoned. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of the cessation of suffering is to be realized. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of the cessation of suffering has been realized. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This is the noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering is to be developed.
Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. This noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering has been developed. Thus, monks, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, penetration, and light. So long, monks, as my knowledge and vision of these four noble truths as they really are in their three phases and 12 aspects was not thoroughly purified in this way, I did not claim to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans. But when my knowledge and vision of these four noble truths as they really are in their three phases and 12 aspects was thoroughly purified in this way, then I claimed to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans. The knowledge and vision arose in me. Unshakable is the liberation of my mind. This is my last birth. Now there is no more renewed existence. This is what the Blessed One said. Elated, the monks of the group of five delighted in the Blessed One's statement. And while this discourse was being spoken, there arose in the Venerable Kondanya the dust-free, stainless vision of the Dhamma. Whatever is subject to origination is all subject to cessation. And when the wheel of the Dhamma had been set in motion by the Blessed One, the earth-dwelling devas raised a cry. At Varanasi, in the deer park at Isipatana, this unsurpassed wheel of the Dhamma has been set in motion by the Blessed One, which cannot be stopped by any ascetic or Brahmin or Deva, or Mara or Brahma, or by anyone in the world. Having heard the cry of the earth-dwelling devas, the devas of the realm of the four great kings raised a cry, At Varanasi, this unsurpassed wheel of the Dhamma has been set in motion by the Blessed One, which cannot be stopped by anyone in the world. Having heard the cry of the devas of the realm of the four great kings, the Tava Timsa devas, the Yama devas, the Tusita devas, the devas who delight in creating, the devas who wield power over others' creations, the devas of Brahma's company, raised a cry. At Varanasi, in the deer park at Isipatana, this unsurpassed wheel of the Dhamma has been set in motion by the Blessed One, which cannot be stopped by any ascetic or Brahmin or Deva, or Mara or Brahma, or by anyone in the world. Thus, at that moment, at that instant, at that second, the cry spread as far as the Brahma world, and this 10,000-fold world system shook, quaked, and trembled, and an immeasurable great radiance surpassing the divine majesty of the Devas appeared in the world. Then the Blessed One uttered this inspired utterance. Kondanya has indeed understood. Kondanya has indeed understood. In this way, the Venerable Kondanya acquired the name Anya Kondanya. Kondanya who has understood. Samyutta Nikaya 56:11. Dhamma Kaka Pavatana Sutta 5, 420 through 424.